You're listening to Intellectual Erection,
a place where we talk about the naughty.
To stimulate your thinking.
You're listening
to
Intellectual Erection.
Intellectual Erection.
Передачу, где мы говорим о диспутам субъекта секса.
Мы говорим о любви.
To stimulate your thinking.
Welcome back to Intellectual Erection. I'm your host, Patrick. Today, I'm speaking with social media influencer, Amber Emery.
I'm pretty sure everyone in Toronto has seen my boobs at some point or another.
We talk about her career, starting up in nude modeling, the demands of being a social media influencer, and then we get into some heavy discussion about the Me Too era and the Harvey Weinstein trial, and whether or not it can ever be acceptable for a woman to willfully and intentionally sleep with somebody to get ahead. Before we get to the episode, please remember to follow on Instagram at intellectual_erection. Go support on Patreon at patreon.com/intellectualerection. And as always, listen, subscribe, review, and most of all, enjoy. I'm sitting here today with
Amber Emery.
Hi, Amber.
Hi. Welcome to the show. Why I feel so giggly.
That's okay. It's a good sign. That means you're comfortable, I hope.
I am.
You better be comfortable. So, you're new to this.
To the podcast world?
Well, to this podcast.
Yes.
So you don't know what's coming. Okay, first of all, before we get anywhere, why don't you tell the audience what it is that you do?
So I do a variety of things. I do hair as my day job. I'm very passionate about anything in the beauty industry. And I'm also trying to delve more into the world of being an influencer and different modeling and branding and whatnot, which is, you know, it's such a big element in today's society. So there's lots of money to be made in that. And there's lots for me to learn. I no longer work in the bar industry. So it's been good getting a little bit more sleep lately.
I remember that feeling.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm like kind of like a jack of all trades. Like I like to do a bunch of different stuff. Keeps me mentally stimulated.
Well, you're definitely on that path. I mean, your Instagram right now has over 100,000 followers. Your phone at the moment, which is plugged in, is constantly buzzing. So people are constantly trying to reach you. You are taking pictures like every damn day. You did some stuff recently with Vitaly, who used to be on YouTube. And you're constantly promoting stuff for your beauty stuff, your hair stuff. So it seems like you got a lot going on.
Yeah, I like to keep busy.
Which is partially what we're here to talk about. Specifically, though, it's more of the nude modeling stuff and how that intersects with the rest of your life. But before we get into all that exciting work that you do, the thing that I always ask my guests on this show is the origin question. Now, it's a two-parter, and you can choose not to answer the first part. Mm-hmm. But I basically ask, if you remember the first time as a kid that you ever encountered sex or sexuality, if you remember it, maybe it was something in the media, maybe it was something that you saw when you didn't quite know what it was. I'm always interested in hearing that story. And then there's a second part.
Well, I guess there's two parts to my answer because I remember when I was a kid, you know, obviously my mom was pretty strict when I was growing up and my dad was a little bit more of like the fun, like let's break the rules kind of guy. So he always used to let me stay up late and watch, you know, horror movies or just movies that aren't appropriate for children. So obviously I saw sex scenes and whatnot. I didn't really obviously relate to them. It was kind of like, ew, like, you know, it's like mommy and daddy stuff, you know. But I do remember when I was young, I would have dreams, like wet dreams, but I wouldn't know what that good feeling was because I would actually like have orgasms in my dreams, but I was a kid. So eventually, obviously, the two things came together, but yeah. So that's the first thing I remember.
Do you think that the scenes in the movies maybe caused some of those wet dreams? Is that why you're relating the two?
I don't really know if they came hand in hand, but I don't even know what I was dreaming about to make it. But I just remember that I was like, oh, that felt so good. But it was like a weird feeling, you know?
It's funny how many people come on this podcast and their origin story is exactly that. They saw something in the movies that they weren't supposed to see, and it was a scene and it was hot and it bothered them or it disturbed them in a weird way. Mm-hmm. But it awoke them at least partially to sexuality, and they're like, what is this fucking thing?
I also remember I was up at a cottage with my family, and this is when I was younger, and it was like a cottage they would rent out to a lot of like fishermen. It was like up north, there was no electricity, no nothing, and they had Penthouse magazines in the outhouse there, and like I guess none of the adults had seen like to pick them up or whatever, so I was like a little 11-year-old kid looking through these old dusty magazines, and so that was like another, you know, eye-opener for me.
Do you remember what you felt when you saw those people in the
movie? I felt like I shouldn't be looking at it. Like, I did feel like nervous, like my mom was gonna like walk in any minute or something, you know?
Right, so you felt that there
were consequences. Because I guess it's like, it's always like when you're a kid, it's shameful almost, you know, to be thinking these things or having sexual thoughts or whatever.
Absolutely. And that's partially what this podcast is about. It's to kind of destigmatize and get rid of that shame and guilt around those sexual experiences so we can have a kind of more sex positive world.
So woohoo!
So the second part of the origin question is how you became involved in the sex positive communities. So what I mean by that is, and I'm not sure if you participate in any of the communities really, but as a person who gets photographed nude, you partially are intersecting, at least to my knowledge. Usually when I say sex positive communities, I mean like kink, polyamory, BDSM, sex work, and all sorts of other things, fetish.
So I believe it was 6 or 7 years ago, maybe at this point, I had gone to my very first Paradise Challenge at Hedonism in Jamaica. And so this is a big gathering of photographers and models, and it's used, that resort is used because obviously it's a nude resort, so you can do photo shoots completely nude on the beach. And that was when I was first exposed to people who are so comfortable that no matter what physical state that they're in or physical athleticism, whatever, however they look, they're walking around as proud as can be. And then eventually, once you get over like, see it looking around and seeing everybody naked, then it's almost like you get to know people better because they can walk up to you naked, introduce themselves. You don't even look down, you know, you just get so desensitized to it. Now, I've done some work with the Black Tape Project with Joel Alvarez, who does like the cool tape designs and stuff. So he's always booked at adults resorts. So I've been to a bunch now.
I'm not sure if this is the same person who did the stuff with Jackie Childs. I interviewed her many, many moons ago, but she has a photo set with a lot of the tape work, elaborate, really interesting tape work, so it might be.
Yeah, well, he's the king of tape, right? So he does the best job. I do think there's a lot of imitators. But yeah, I'm really grateful for those opportunities that I got to like really, it changed me as a person because now I kind of see people who are really conservative, I just kind of feel bad because I feel like you're limiting just like your life experience.
And you like to broaden.
I like to broaden my experiences. I like to, you know, I would say I'm probably the opposite of conservative. And I don't really see anything wrong with it.
Absolutely.
I'm pretty sure everyone in Toronto has seen my boobs at some point or another.
Have they? Well, if they haven't, hit up the Instagram and you can definitely see a couple pictures. I'm scared because the photo set you sent me for promoting this podcast episode might get me more than shadow banned. Instagram's already warned me. I'm going to have to try to do something.
I carefully blurred out the nipples. So.
I know. Like, female presenting nipples apparently are the worst thing on the internet, and we have to protect the world from seeing them because it's
going to poke your eye out.
Yeah. It's absurd.
Mine might. You know?
Check it on Insta. You'll find out. Okay. Well, the next question that I have is how you got involved with nude modeling. I guess you partially... Oh,
sorry if you guys can hear my pants.
Let's hear that. That's like some ASMR.
Yeah. They're pleather or no, vinyl. I don't know what they are, but these pants are so bomb. They look like they're shiny, but they have rainbow. also on them. I don't know if you can see.
In the light, maybe? Yeah. A little bit? You must be...
I like shiny pants.
It must get sweaty in there, though.
It does. It does. And I'm not wearing underwear.
There's a soup in there.
Okay. It's called swamp ass.
Swamp ass?
Swamp ass, yeah.
That's the new thing.
Yeah.
Okay, I learn things every day when I'm on this podcast, I swear to God. Swamp ass. Kids, hashtag swamp ass. So, how did you get involved with nude modeling? Was it hedonism?
I would say yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. I started off obviously not being confident enough to do full nude. You know, I would do something like implied. I would always have my hands covering or whatever. And obviously once I had my breast augmentation, that helped a lot. I was quite flat before. Actually, I think a lot of things happened for me after my surgery because I got more into the club scene. I started working downtown. As much as it's a small change overall as a human being, as a woman, when you feel more curvaceous, like it automatically makes you feel sexier, right? Like it took me from feeling like an adolescent to like a woman. So kind of snowballed from there.
So it seems you have a very positive kind of view on body mods in general. Yeah. And I think there's stigma on the end of body mods when it comes to a lot of specifically women augmenting breasts. Now, also
I would say that's like the least of the surgeries asses, of the, these lips. Days. Yeah. You know, I fully promote everything that I've done on myself, which hasn't been an outrageous amount. But like if a woman asks me, oh, hey, where did you get your Botox or where did you get your lips done? I'm the first person to like give her all the information, answer any questions. I know some women like to be private, but I think like it's kind of shady when, you know, you're obviously flaunting a surgery and then telling everybody it's natural. I don't really think that's cool, you know. It is what it is, but I would rather empower other women who are feeling self-conscious about something they would like to change and let them know that it's nothing to be ashamed of to want to change if you can, right?
Right. So your message is like, if you're healthy about it and you want to do this, then you shouldn't feel bad about wanting to do
it. Exactly.
And here's how you could do it safely.
Exactly.
And the reason I said body mods is because it is just that. And a lot of people don't recognize other body mods like tattoos and piercings and stretchings and things like that that are taken to be more alternative, to be in the same category as, say, getting implants or getting fillers or getting Botox.
Yeah, I would say they're two different things to me. I guess they are body mods, but yeah, you don't really see like a soccer mom getting her ears stretched out, right?
Right.
But she'll do a lot of Botox.
Right. Maybe get some implants.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. But at the end of the day, the body mod is just about the way it makes you feel.
Exactly.
And in some cases, it's permanent.
And for me, it's been a very positive experience. Although I've had three breast surgeries because I had a complication, which is like, I think it's like one or I can't remember the statistics, but I got a capsular contracture, which is when you get the scar tissue. So one of the boobs got super hard, so they had to do another surgery to fix that. And then I decided I wanted them to be softer in general. So I took out my old implants and I put in new ones, and I'm finally happy. But I did it, you know, over the course of years. It's not like I was...
Do you have any advice for anybody who's looking to get breast implants? Like, what didn't you know going in that might be valuable information for people wanting to get that done today?
I feel like... number one, go to more consultations than you think you need. I feel like I would have benefited from seeing like maybe like two or three different doctors, because I went to my friend's surgeon because she had recommended it. I liked her breasts, and so I went to him after one consultation. But I feel like I should have maybe seen what some other surgeons had to say. And also for women getting their breasts done. Usually you'll go smaller than what you actually want because you're scared. When you get the surgery, there's a lot of swelling. So you get used to the shape and how they look when they're healing, and then the swelling goes away. So they'll go down significantly. So I always say to get a bigger implant, breast wise than what you want originally, because you try them on in your bra and you see, you know, kind of how you want them to look. Always go for a couple cc's bigger.
Okay.
Bigger is better. Kind of. I don't know.
And I guess I mean, I don't know a lot about implants. What I do know is that there's different types of surgeries.
Apparently now there was one they were doing with women with the breasts where it's a textured implant. And now they're recalling it, which is really scary. So women out there, if you have a textured implant, go check it out with a surgeon or a doctor, whatever, and see if you're okay.
So yeah, there's several types though, right? There's like there's a silicone, there's saline solution.
Silicone, the cohesive gel is the best, I believe, for texture and like lack of rippling.
Right.
So and it gives you like the most natural feeling.
Natural feeling.
Yeah.
And then there's several ways to implant. There's like under the breast, under the from the side of the breast, under the chest muscle, under the pec, and
then through the nipple, right? Under the muscle because I feel like if you work out, which I like to train, if you flex your chest, their implants are under and they kind of move around and shoot into your armpits. That's what happened to me, so I took them out. So if you don't want weird moving breasts,
put them on top.
Okay. Yeah, put them over.
All right. I think that might be useful information. Okay. The next question I have for you. What does sex mean to you in media and how does it intersect with your notions of femininity and who you are? It's a bit of a loaded question, but we can unpack it.
I feel like sex sells, right? I just did a shoot with snakes, which somebody was mentioning to me like, oh, snakes are so phallic. And I didn't really think about it, but he was like, obviously, like when a hot girl is holding a snake, like that's kind of what goes through people's minds, even if it's subconsciously. And damn, it did look good. So whatever, it's phallic. I personally, I love looking at beautiful women. I appreciate the woman's body. I love looking at artistic, beautiful, sexy pictures of girls. If you look at my Instagram, I only follow really photographers and hot chicks.
And really cool podcasts.
And cool podcasts. But that's what I personally like to look at. And for me, like I love feminine, like edgy looking women. I don't know. That's what it means to me. I don't know.
So you admire those people and you kind of want to do that kind of work.
Yeah.
You like to bring sex to the forefront.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it's an empowering thing for you.
Yeah, I think so. I've had certain people in my family, you know, not be as approving as I would like. But when it comes down to it, you only have one life. So you have to live it the way you want.
How did they initially react to your work?
Very, very badly. And this is when I was just starting to do photo shoots and I had just gotten my first breast augmentation and I have some conservative family members that were very disagreeing in terms of my choices, which, you know, I'm not hurting anybody. I'm making myself happy. And when it comes down to it, when you stick to your guns and you stick to what you believe, but you're kind as a person, things always kind of will smooth over. And now we're totally fine because I stuck to who I am and there's no change in me now.
So they learn to love they
learn
over time.
You learn to accept people for who they are if they accept themselves.
So I think, are you talking about family members?
Talking about family members. I have, most of my friends are actually really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
A lot of my friends are like, it's 2020 now. Like, oh, yeah. I think that I don't feel like I do anything that's more, you know, risque than a lot of girls out there. I would say I'm more toned down than a lot of my friends, so.
Right. So I imagine it's easier for friends than it is for family to see maybe nude pictures of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I don't believe my brothers follow me on Instagram or anything like that.
Probably with good reason.
Right. Yeah. It makes sense, right?
He can support from the sidelines.
Exactly.
Just like cheer over the phone.
You know, my mom will love me to death forever. And like if she doesn't like something I'm doing, I'm assuming she just doesn't ask me questions about it.
Right. Well, I'm glad that you were able to smooth over those relationships.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they're once they see that your work is fulfilling to you, and I mean, clearly they have, then they're going to be supportive, even if they're not willing to kind of consume the content.
Well, one of the things I think about, too, is like, you know, if you're going to be taking pictures and doing modeling and any sort of stuff like that, you have a limited amount of time to do it. So why not just enjoy your body the way it is in your prime and, you know, and then make sure that you're monetizing and saving some money and then moving on to something else once your boobs start sagging or whatever.
Right. There is a shelf life for this kind of work.
There apparently. Is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's an unfortunate thing, I think, because we prize certain bodies over others, and then if you lose out on that market because of things like aging, then you kind of have to find other avenues to promote yourself. And
there is ways to segue into other things.
Sometimes that works. Sometimes that can work if you've nurtured
You just
other
have
parts.
To make it so that your brand is more about who you are than what you look like. Because once people, if you show your personality more so than, you know, there's girls out there that just take a million hot photos, but they never post one video of them talking. So it's like, you don't even know who they are. How are their fans going to follow them as they get older when they don't actually know what their personality is like at all? So now it's more about like personality, I would say.
I think you're right about this when it comes to social media, especially with the ideas of accepting different body types and different types of looks that are non-traditional. We're now getting a whole slew of humans that are able to become influencers without the traditional staples of what sex is supposed to look like for it to be marketable. So on this end, now you're getting a lot more of the personality of the human touch, and that comes across far stronger, and it seems to last longer and have a stronger following than just images. Because at the end of the day, an image is just one representation of who you are. Yeah. And it's kind of flat. It's got one dimension. And then the rest of you can lift off that page if you have other things to share.
Exactly.
Because let's face it, with social media, there's so many humans out there that it's oversaturated. At this point, you have to sell three-dimensional.
Well, even like in comparison, when I go to LA, like the girls there, like it's normal to have a million, 2 million followers. You know what I mean? Like, you know, having anything under 500K, it's like you're nobody sort of in the social media world. But I guess like the amount of people in California trumps, well, we're, no pun intended. Yeah. It's way more than we have here, you know, to build a following. But yeah, you just like, you realize you're a little fish in a big pond or whatever that term is. So
yeah, and I mean, there you have access to so many photographers and so many settings to shoot, more days of the year that you can shoot in better weather and so on. I've heard people of actually traveling to the States, especially in California, to just be able to get photos for their Instagram. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's the thing now. So I guess this next question segues into this nicely. It's, what is it like maintaining your brand on social media? What does that involve? Does it come with sacrifice? Are there any pressures to look, act, or present yourself in a certain way? And does that affect your sense of freedom and authenticity?
So the one thing that I've realized with in terms of Instagram is it literally is a job. Like, I have a girlfriend that grew her page so significantly in like a year. And I was asking her, I'm like, how did you do that? Like, I've grown my page organically and everything. I haven't bought any followers, which takes longer. And she basically every single day was posting every 24 hours a good quality hot picture, and also tagging all of these other pages to get reposted and making sure that she's posting at a time when her followers are online so that she'll get more engagement and all this stuff. So it's not just like fun anymore. It's not just like, oh, here's a photo, I like it, I'm gonna post it. You have to strategically plan what you're doing. So it does make it more of a job and less, you know, of a hobby. And yeah, like, I guess, you know, instead of enjoying some of the, you know, things that I'm doing as I'm doing them, I'm thinking of a way to take a good picture or video of what I'm doing, which takes away from actually enjoying the moment. So I think sometimes it might be beneficial to like literally have a weekend where I turn my phone off.
Yeah.
In the future.
It's like seeing the people at the concert that have their phones out, right? And they're trying to capture that moment because it's significant for them to have it on their social media for whatever reason.
And I always skip over those stories of like people filming a concert, like,
right? But it's just that idea that you're kind of detached from the moment because you feel this obligation to capture it for a future moment where somebody might enjoy it or you might have some opportunity as a result of it. So I guess that's the sacrifice end of it. Does it feel like after sacrificing a lot of those moments that it somehow conflicts with freedom and authenticity for you?
I think that I'm personally, I think I'm authentic considering, or like in regards to my page versus who I am as a person. Like, I post all sorts of silly, goofy things without makeup, and, you know, I am who I am. And yeah, so I don't really feel like it interferes with that.
Okay.
Although, like, I would be concerned if I was going to go out and get loaded and then have somebody film me and tag me. That would suck.
right.
So I avoid that, you know, if I can.
I mean, I think we still all want to preserve some aspects of our privacy for ourselves. And with the amount of surveillance that's available to us, it kind of narrows.
As soon as you go out, you have to assume that you're not having any privacy if anybody has a phone. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I've seen now there's newer and newer technologies that kind of disable our ability to remain anonymous and private.
Mm-hmm. Like what?
Well, there was a technology that's been held back for a while now, and it's a face identification application
that will
literally read your face
and link you to the person's social media.
Well, it will match with all other photographs available of that human online, so you will be able to find out who they are, their name, potentially their address, their social media. And it's not being given to the public for obvious reasons, but they're kind of piloting it with different police departments. And it's
I would be scared if the public got a hold of that, just with like all the serial killer shows that I watch. Jesus.
I just heard this on The Daily. So it's the New York Times, The Daily podcast.
Yeah.
They're talking about how the FBI was able to use this app to identify a person who was, I think, sexually assaulted a child or something from a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
They scanned his...
Could you imagine if it went in the wrong hands?
Well, that's what they were saying. That was the argument, right? Because they had this one flittering picture of him in the background, walking in the background. They took that scan of his face and found him through social media in somebody else's photo in the background. It was somebody at a gym, took a picture of themselves, and in the mirror, this guy's working out. They found out the gym, the FBI went there, and one of the employees gave away who it was.
Wow, so easy.
Yeah. So if that goes into the public hands, then you could be out and somebody could be like, who is that? I've seen her somewhere before. Does a quick scan of your face with the app. Oh, boom, Amber Emery. There's her Instagram. Maybe all the things that come up could even locate you.
Well, that's not my real last name, so that makes me feel better. I'm not telling you guys what it really is.
Oh, no. That's all good. It's all good. So yeah, there's a lot of things in the way of social media that I think come as a bit of a sacrifice when you become a public figure.
Yeah.
And part of that might be sacrificing some of your privacy and some of your ability to just do things anonymously.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I feel like I'm not really at a level like that for sure. Like, I can walk around in Toronto and maybe just bump into a couple of friends, but I can see how that would affect some people, like...
Over time. If they have enough publicity.
Yeah.
The next thing I want to ask you, flat out, have you ever experienced slut shaming for the work that you do?
Well, I have people commenting stuff on my page all the time. I always leave the comments. I rarely delete them. Like, somebody will comment, oh, you're just a 4 out of 10, or, you know, you shouldn't post this, blah, blah, blah. This isn't Pornhub. Somebody was literally trolling my page for weeks and would DM me and comment on all my pictures asking me how big my cock was and saying, I know you used to be a man, show me your cock, going on and on. And I honestly kind of laughed a little bit. I don't really let that stuff bother me at all. And in fact, like, I actually find it entertaining. So,
and online, you've dealt with it fairly.
Online, I feel like everybody deals with it. Yeah. You know, even people who aren't posting anything scandalous will get a hater or two.
How are your DMs?
You didn't make it if you didn't get a hater or two, you know?
Right.
Yeah. My DMs are hilarious.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do screenshot the dick pics just because they're an interesting shape or whatever. Because the people who send me dick pics always have the worst looking dicks. That's so funny.
So I guess they're looking for validation.
Yeah, I guess so. And I give them none, so.
Do you ever rate their dicks?
In my mind, yeah.
You should send them back a rating.
Yeah.
For money. be like, here's my PayPal.
Yeah.
$20 and I'll give you a rating out of 10 for your dick.
I'll make it a nice rating, you know, just so they feel good and they continue.
Well, the more you pay, the better your rating, and you can stamp it. Amber Emery rated certified. This dick certified by Amber Emery, a 5.5 out of 10. Why not?
It's a good business idea.
Well, you might as well. I've suggested this business idea before to somebody, and I've seen that a bunch of sex workers are using this as a thing, as dick ratings. So I hope there's people actually paying instead of just flooding your inbox with their penises.
Maybe in the future.
Have you ever got a really nice dick pic?
From my ex-boyfriends.
Okay.
Yeah.
So only the ones you wanted.
Exactly.
Were the good dick pics.
Exactly. Okay. If I request it, then the guy knows he has a nice dick.
Right. Makes sense. Okay. The next question follows up from this, from a guest that I had previously on the show, Laura Desiree. She's a naked news anchor. Mm-hmm. So she's done a lot of journalism with porn stars and so on. And she actually asked something that was quite interesting. And I thought I should use her question and ask somebody else to see what they kind of say. So Laura Desiree once asked if it's okay for a woman today in the Me Too era to sleep with someone to get ahead. So do you think there's a way for women to be empowered and use sex to their advantage to get ahead? How would someone own that in the face of slut shaming?
I feel like I would think that it would be very difficult for somebody to do something in terms of, you know, furthering their career by fucking their boss or something and having other people accept it. I think it's always going to be taboo. And I think that, you know, I don't really know what to say on the matter. I just feel like it shouldn't replace talent and it shouldn't replace hard work just because you think you're hot and you can fuck somebody to get something out of it. You know what I mean?
But the way to look at it is also taking advantage of the men who would put women in that position. It's saying, yeah, I'm willing to do the thing that you're asking, mm-hmm. right? But you're not going to get to hold it above my head. Like, I'll be the first to say I fucked you to get this job, and I won't care about it. So that's kind of the way that I was seeing her ask this question. Is like, is there a way to do that successfully to... Let's talk, for example,
I could see how you could maybe somewhat take the power from them in that situation.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to it, you didn't use your skills in terms of the job to get that job, right?
Right, but you're...
So people aren't going to respect you in that industry. Like, let's say you're an actress and you want the part and you fuck for the part. You're not going to be respected by your peers. But you might, if you're proud of doing that, maybe have a one-up on the guy that you did that with. And you can, you know, walk out of there holding your head up high, but your peers aren't going to respect you either way, I don't think. Either out of jealousy or just not approving of it.
Right, but the thing is that this already happens, right? It already happens that we look at, for example, Harvey Weinstein, the case is still happening now. So how many times did he put women in the position of having to meet that choice of fuck me, do something sexual with me in order to gain a part? Mm-hmm. And it's independent of talent. It's not like he cared whether you're talented or not. It's just a matter of, did he want to fuck you?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the idea...
Whatever happened to him? He's in jail, right?
No. The trial is ongoing right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't really follow it that closely.
I listen to the Daily, the New York Times Daily, and they do updates on what's been going on with the Harvey Weinstein trial. I listened recently. They interviewed his lawyer. She's a woman, and she has some really fucked up ideas about sexual assault.
I'm sure that some of the women were willing and ready to do it, and I'm sure there was already word on the street that that's what he required when they walked in the door. So there was women who wanted the part, and they wanted to do what it took to get the part. And then that's, I guess, their prerogative. But I don't really know how you could possibly, you know, make this something that's accepted in society.
Well, it's just kind of turning the tide. I think the idea is to turn the tide here.
My question is, like, let's say the woman producer expected male actors to perform something sexual for her.
Yeah.
Would it be treated the same way? Or well, wedding, but like
that's the social standard, right? That's the double standard. Is I would expect that if a man had to fuck a woman to get the job, he wouldn't feel two ways about it. He might be the first to say, "Yeah, I fucked her to get the job." No, I fucked her and got the job. I fucked a powerful woman and got the job. I'm proud. I should be celebrated. And the idea is, with the Me Too era, why can't women do the same
thing? Does it somewhat touch on the fact if the person is attractive or not?
I don't think it matters necessarily, because power can also be attractive, mm-hmm. right? So in both instances, when somebody has power, it's independent of how they look.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, you can have somebody who is considered to be not attractive,
mm-hmm.
and you say, I had to sleep with this person to get whatever part, right? Harvey Weinstein, I don't take to be an attractive man.
Mm-hmm.
That's my subjective rating of how he looks.
Mm-hmm.
So me saying I fucked Harvey Weinstein to get the part, I wouldn't necessarily be bragging based on how he looks, but I could be bragging based on the amount of power that he has,
mm-hmm.
right? If I find somebody who's a politician, who's a well-known celebrity.
You know what I would find would be the worst thing is if, let's say, somebody went forward and did do a sexual act with this, with Harvey Weinstein, and he didn't enjoy it and didn't give them the part after. So they actually, like, you know, went through with it and got nothing out of it and just left feeling shameful. And I'm sure there was people like that too.
It probably could have happened.
Right? I don't think he gave the part to like everybody.
His list is something like over 90 women who've come out. Those are just the ones. Those are just ones who have been vocal. Imagine that being the narrative with the next Hollywood producer. It's not Harvey Weinstein, but it's some other guy. And some woman comes out, a brand new actress, and she's like, "Yeah, I got this part because I fucked this guy." And
women slut shame women more than men slut shame women.
I'm sure it happens, but you know, like I said, over time. Is there a way to change that narrative by
I don't think in it? Our lifetimes.
You got the pessimist angle on this one. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you. I guess it depends on the person. There have been plenty of examples of women kind of owning things in media that have been controversial. And of course they got a lot of shit for it throughout mm-hmm. their careers, and they still stood up and stood through it. I mean, even, you know, figures like Madonna and Lady Gaga and whatnot got shit for the amount of sexuality they brought into mm-hmm. their media.
Mm-hmm.
I can't just say
media. And now they're like, you know,
icons.
They're icons, but also, like, if you look back, they're doing nothing compared to what people are doing now.
Yeah. So this is what I'm saying. There might be a possibility for that narrative to change. Especially now, because men are being shamed,
mm-hmm.
finally, for being rapists,
mm-hmm.
which I think could turn the tide to a point where I could envision a future, ideally speaking, where a woman can say, I had to fuck that pig to get this part, and I did it knowing full well what I was doing,
mm-hmm.
but you know what? This is also a demonstration of my talent and my skill, because it's been recognized by the Academy. Mm-hmm. I've had my peers rate this. It's mm-hmm. like the movie's good. Despite all this, this is the step that I took, and I took it willingly, and I took advantage of him.
I would be very, you know, interested to see if somebody would come forward and admit to something like that. Because I feel like that's a conversation people would have more so with their friends than anyone would admit to the general public. You know what I mean? Girls talk a lot between friends, and girls will share a lot, you know? But yeah, I'll be very shocked if like a prominent figure comes out and says something like that in the future.
Yeah.
I'll call you if that happens, and I'll be like, you were right.
I'm not necessarily saying it's the case. What I'm saying is that I'd like to see that possibility, because I can imagine, I don't know many instances where a man would feel so shameful about having sex with a particular powerful woman to say that they got their position because of the sex. I could imagine him, you know, feeling ashamed that he had to have sex in order to get the job, but not necessarily that he had to have sex.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we'll find out soon if there can be these kinds of changes in the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after this Weinstein trial, we'll see what happens.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So the next thing I want to ask you is, what advice do you have for young women interested in your line of work?
I would guess my advice would be always try to make, you know, your next photo shoot or your next move in general better than the one before. Don't try and just create so much content that's all, you know, you'll do an amazing shoot that'll be like fire. And then you'll kind of do something mediocre and post that just to like have something. You always want to progress. And also, I guess, just move confidently, right? Confidence is key.
All right. What else do you do aside from all the sexy stuff? And I mean, you talked about some of the stuff that you mm-hmm. do. And what are your plans for the future? What do you want to do? Maybe what do you want to do once this so-called unfortunate shelf life expires for...
Well, I'm already doing a bunch of other stuff. I'm involved with a new up-and-coming company called Opulencia, which hosts like upscale luxury events. It's going to be, you know, it's relatively new, so we're growing our clientele now, and it's going to be centered around sporting events and concerts and just creating luxury experience for our clients. Basically, like, you know, we take care of everything that they would need, essentially a concierge service. My boss would explain it better, guys. And I'm also planning on starting a page solely about the different beauty treatments that I do. And I want to do in-depth reviews and film the treatments and stuff because it's something I'm passionate about. So I'm maybe starting a YouTube page or my own website. I haven't decided yet because I have tried so many different cool, like, new technologies that they have. It's so amazing, like, what they can do now with different lasers. And I would love to share that with the world as well. And obviously, there's new technology all the time, so I could keep going with that.
Okay, well, before I let you go, the last thing that I always ask my guests is if they have a fun, sexy, or outrageous story that they want to share. The wilder, dirtier, the better, whatever you're willing to kind of part with.
Okay, well, this is just something, I guess, a little bit just short and sweet. I was in Costa Rica, and I was there for one of my good friend's weddings. And when I arrived there, I was so excited to get to the beach, go in the ocean. I wore leather pants on the plane. So I had swamp ass. Let's be real here.
We're back at swamp ass.
So I wanted to literally throw on a bikini and go swimming. I opened my bag and I had no bathing suits because I left my separate bag with all my bikinis. I remember I left it on my bed. So I'm about to, like, you know, start bawling, blah, blah, blah. I end up pounding back some drinks, and then my friends are like, let's just go shopping and you can buy something in town. So by the time we get to town, I'm half in the bag. And I end up buying a little gold thong bikini bottom, and my friend had lent me a top. So I go in the back and I throw it on and I start walking out to the beach, and my friends keep trying to talk to me and I'm brushing them off. I was wearing the thong backwards, or the bikini bottoms backwards. So both of my vaginal lips were out, and then the thong part was in the middle, and I'm walking around, like, not even noticing. And actually, this girl I didn't even know that well ended up being super nice and taking me into the ocean, and she pulled them down and put them on the right way for me. So kudos to you, Sonia. Thank you.
Well, that's how you get a proper tan, though. You can tan the whole bird.
You know, out. I'd rather just have nothing on than a backwards thong, because it's not very flattering.
I wouldn't know what that feels like, but I bet it's not as much fun as this story.
And another piece of advice to everybody, don't wear leather pants on a plane.
Don't get that swamp ass.
Yeah. Avoid the swamp ass.
Okay. Before I let you go, then, this is your chance to shout out where people can find you, all the places, all your social media, plug away, make sure they know where to get to you.
Well, my Instagram page has links to everything. So you guys can just follow Amber_, and I regret the underscores now, but I made that a long time ago. Amber_Emery, Emery_ And yeah, give me a follow. Don't report any of my pictures or I will find you and kill you.
All right. Amber, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. You're listening to Intellectual Erection, a place where we talk about the naughty to stimulate your thinking.